This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Welcome to the Fun Kids Science Weekly. This is the show where we find out all the amazing, wonderful and dangerous things in the universe that science throws our way. Now, my name's Dan. Thank you so much for coming along. Today, we will hear how the Bloodhound supersonic car is getting on in its battle to travel over 1,000 miles an hour on land. Also, we'll take a trip to Saturn to have a look at the rings with the space cadets. And we will dive deep into the Earth with Dangerous Dan, having a look at a big old hole. First, we're catching up with our germ friends, Benny and Mal. Now, these are two microbes, and they tell us loads more about science, biology, and how your body works. Today, it's all about what's good and bad for you.
Good Bugs, Bad Bugs, with support from the Society for General Microbiology.
Microbes get everywhere. They're on us, in us, and around us. If you've got a microscope, like me, you can see them for yourself. Look!
All right there.
That's Benny. He's a helpful sort of microbe. Lots of microbes are.
Not you again. Can't you leave us in peace?
And that's Mal. He's not very nice. A few microbes are horrible, and they're called germs.
Charming. I'm not all that keen on you either.
Hey, easy, Mal, mate. You're not doing yourself any favours there.
So, what's up, guys?
Well, what we thought would be quite nice is to introduce you to a few of our microbe mates. Show you some of the shapes and sizes they come in.
And hopefully you'll catch a horrible snotty cold and you have to stay in bed and stop bothering us.
I'm so sorry, he can't help it. It's just the way he is.
You're embarrassing me. Have you looked in the mirror recently?
So, microbes, we're really tiny. You could fit about 50 bacterial cells across the width of one human hair. Viruses are even titchier. Some microbes are made up of one cell. Some are more complex. And there's trillions of us across the planet.
And it would quite literally take a trillion years to show you every single one, because you look quite stupid and we'd have to talk quite slowly.
Now, come on, Mal, that's just rude. Do you want her to get the bleach out? Well, behave. Mal does have a point, surprisingly. There's so many we haven't got time to meet them all, so let's make it a little bit simpler and divide them into five main types. And we can introduce a few characters on the way. Type 1. That's your cue, Mal. Come on, this was your idea.
Fungi. Fungi are fun guys, or they can be. Lovely athlete's foot makes your feet all itchy and smelly. That's a fungus. Good friend of mine.
Fortunately, most fungi are helpful. Some of my helpful fungi mates are the decomposers. They break down dead organisms, which make nutrients that go back into the soil. If you have a compost heap, they'll be hard at work in there. Next up, algae.
Algae are microbes that live in watery places. What? That's all I've got.
You're joking, right? I mean, you've overlooked the whole fact that they create most of the oxygen we breathe. It's incredible. Just through photosynthesis, they're right at the start of the food chain. Water snails gobble up all that algae. Fish eat the snails, birds eat the fish, and on it goes. You get the idea?
Snails? Full of all that algae for dinner? No wonder fish poo is green.
That's a sweeping generalisation, and green poo can be perfectly normal. Let's move on. Next up, something Mal and I know all about, because we are bacteria! Bacteria, like me and Mal, are single-celled chaps. And some kinds of bacteria can make you unwell. Those pesky germs. But the vast majority of us couldn't be more different. Loads of us are even helpful.
Oh, yes. I'd forgotten about all the bleeding bacteria do-gooders. Oh, they get right on my nerves. I wouldn't mind, but they do go on about it. Ooh, we're so helpful breaking down a variety of foodstuffs into nutrients so easy for the human body to absorb. Gets right on my wick.
It's true, though, isn't it? Bacteria, all single-celled microbes, come in a literally immense variety. And in your body, there are 10 times as many bacterial cells than human cells. You are more bacteria than you are a person. So it's a good job they're mostly nice, like me. There are lots in your guts, as much as a kilogram, helping you break down food, mostly. You also get bacteria in a huge amount of yummy food. Like a bit of yoghurt? Who doesn't? Well, you can't make it without bacteria. Next up, we have...
Protozoa! Plasmodium is my absolute fave protozoan, a nasty little microbe that causes malaria. It invades the red blood cells, multiplies inside them, making them burst open. It would kill you if you didn't take medicine or make you really badly ill, at least.
That's just not nice. You get plenty of decent, hard-working protozoa that keep their heads down. They just get on with their business gobbling up germs in sewage farms. They don't hurt anyone. Look at the amoeba too. Nicest protozoa you could hope to meet. And you should see them shapeshift. It's quite a trick, I can tell you. They make it look simple.
Oh yeah, they're simple all right.
Don't give microbes a bad name, Mal. Let's move it on. Viruses. Okay, viruses. Yeah, well, they are pretty horrible, really. Can't really argue with the facts. Go on then, you're clearly the expert here.
Viruses are really tiny, non-living parasites. To survive, they have to find cells to invade. These are the host cells. Each virus has its own favourite host. Could be a human cell, a bird cell, or even a bacterial cell. And once inside, they start multiplying, producing copies of themselves.
They like to take over and make you feel ill, basically. Never really got on with viruses, have to be honest there. Chalk and cheese. Different.
Not that different. Don't flatter yourself. We're all microbes.
Indeed we are. Oh, I think I might possibly be about to divide. How about you, Mal?
Yeah, definitely feeling dividey.
Dividing is something we bacteria can't help doing. Making copies of ourselves by splitting in two, basically. Here we go. So, anyway, we better go. As you can see, microbes come in all sorts. Vast majority don't bother humans at all and can even be helpful. I hope Mal and I have been helpful microbes for you today.
You definitely have. Thanks, Benny and Mal. See you next time.
Yeah, we've got loads more Benny and Mal adventures online for you to check out. Also, get them on your phone or your tablet on iTunes, on the free Fun Kids app, and listen at funkidslive.com. Now, in a sec, we'll chat to a scientist who has studied the history of the Earth, and he'll tell us a little bit more about how things underground can reveal loads about the world's past. Very quickly before, though, I want to remind you that if you are enjoying the Fun Kids Science Weekly, if you're loving learning about all the crazy stuff that science throws our way, well, you can let me know and you can be part of the Fun Kids Science Weekly family by getting on iTunes and leaving us a review. It seriously is so simple for you to get involved in the show. Just take out your phone or your tablet, load up the iTunes podcast store while you're there, write a nice review, drop us 5 stars if you fancy, and leave your name as well. That's really important. Leave your name, let me know that you're there, that you're listening, that you're loving the show, and next week I might say a thank you myself. It is the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, our big guest this week is a scientist who can tell us all about what Britain was like under ice. Matt Carney is a researcher. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, thanks. You?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Now, how long ago was Britain under ice?
Well, the ice advanced to cover Britain about 25,000 years ago, and it was there for about 5,000 years. And then it started out and we saw ice free about 15,000 years ago. All the ice was gone and we'd have start having a climate kind of similar to what we have now.
I know it sounds like a silly question. Where did all that ice go? Simply into the oceans?
Well, first off, it melted and formed lots of lakes and things. And that's what my research is looking at, what those lakes were like and how long they stayed around for. And then it just drained away into the sea. And that's sometimes why we get higher sea levels and changes in sea levels as that ice grows and advances over the Earth's history.
So what were those lakes like then, and how long did they stay around for?
Well, they were a bit cold. They were covered in ice a lot of the time, so they'd freeze in the winter. And there wasn't much in them because it was too cold for any fish or plants or anything. So they were very just muddy, cold, sterile lakes. And they were maybe around till quite recently, some of them. And we can still see some of them today, like Lake Windermere in the Lake District would have been one of those lakes. And so some of them are still around today.
And why is it important for us to know this? What does looking underground in lakes such as Windermere, what does it tell us about the history of our Earth?
So at the minute we're seeing the Earth's climate go through a change. So we can see ice melting where we have ice now. So at the poles in the Arctic and the Antarctic, and that's starting to retreat and melt. But we don't really understand what will happen in those places, how quickly the ice will melt, whether it will melt all at once. So what we have to do is we have to look to the last time that there was a lot of ice on Earth and that melted. And that was the last ice age about 20,000 years ago. So if we do that, we can see how ice responds to a warming climate, and we maybe make some predictions about what will happen in the future.
And what caused the ice age all those many thousands of years ago?
So it was lots of different factors, people think, but one of them is the Earth's orbit. So the Earth can wobble on its axis, so how it spins, and that can move closer or further away from the sun, which makes the Earth colder. And that affects things like ocean currents, which move heat around the Earth, so we get cold places and all the weather changes, and then we start getting ice forming in places where we don't see it today.
And what are you looking for then, when we are looking down there? What are your eyes scanning around for? What are we trying to study from what we've dug up?
So we can look for lots of different things in these sediments. So we can look for tiny fossils. So pollen and things tell us when trees started to come back to England. So if we find tree pollen, we can say that the climate's warmed up and we probably haven't gotten ice anymore. And then before that, we can start looking at what types of sediments are where. And we can say how all that soil and mud was moving around. So was it windy? Was it just a big dusty tundra? So somewhere like Siberia? Or did we have it in lots of rivers and sediment transport? And then the different structures can tell us what those lakes were like. So one thing that I look for is you get each year as the lake freezes over, we get a layer in those sediments that tell us that the lake's froze over. So that's one winter. And then we can count those layers like tree rings. So you can count how many years a tree has been growing, the same way you could count how many years of sediment we have in a lake basin, and use that to tell us how quickly or how slowly the ice was retreating or advancing.
And how far down do we have to dig to be able to count these rings? And also, how do you know where to dig? Is it a case I could go into my back garden right now and do it? Or are there special like areas that are particularly profitable when you dig underground?
So look for things like ancient shorelines. So lots of times you'll see what looks like a flat bit on the side of a hill, and that's an old beach or an old shoreline, and that tells us that maybe in that valley there used to be a lake. So often you'll go in a valley and look. And then a lot of these places, they stay quite wet, so we get bogs. So what I do is I go look for the peat marshes and bogs now, and often under those we'll find the lake sediments. And the amount of peat and modern sediments can really vary on what type of environment. You can be a couple of meters, 3 or 4 meters, or you can have 10, 20 meters of modern sediments since the Ice Age before we can start getting to the lake glacial sediments.
And Matt, what's the most amazing thing, discovery you've made while you have been digging?
Well, I think just the general idea of it is something I find amazing is that when you stood in this landscape and maybe it's a sunny day and you've got lots of trees and forests, just to imagine that landscape buried beneath miles of ice is something I find amazing and why I enjoy doing this. So finding those sediments. So sometimes what we can find is big boulders that the ice has picked up and carried from the Lake District and dropped all across England. So we found a farmer who's dug this huge big boulder out of his forklift truck, pulled it out of the ground. And he had that to show us, and none of the rock in the area is the same. So that boulder has been picked up by the ice, brought from the Lake District to the northwest of England, dropped there, and then left as the ice has retreated. So that was quite amazing to see that.
Awesome. Matt, thank you so much for coming on the Fun Kid Science Weekly. Right, it is time for today's Dangerous Dan, where we take a look at the most deadly things in science. And this week we've got something brand new, because we've had animals on the show before, we've had deadly jobs, dangerous diseases, we've had elements, we've talked about places. Today, though, it's a hole. Because the Kola Super Deep Borehole is exactly what it says. It's the result of a project by the Russian government to dig as deep as possible into the earth. That was it. That was the whole point of the project. Nothing more. They did a little bit of research while they were down there. But all they wanted to do was drive a drill as deep as they could into the world to get close to the core. How dangerous is that, by the way? Turns out no one really knows how dangerous it is because no one knew what would happen when they went down there. At one point, there were fears that it could crack through the earth, that it could splinter the whole way through the world. And they were drilling for 13 years as well. They kept plugging away, going down, down, down into the earth. And they had to stop in 1992, after 13 years. They got so deep that the drill began to melt. And to carry on, they would have needed a metal that could work in temperatures of up to 300 degrees. They had no idea it would be that hot. What's crazy, right, is that the hole, it was so deep, but it was only 23 centimetres wide. Now, that's not even as big as your school ruler. They got there in the end, though. The hole did reach the biggest point ever, the deepest point ever on Earth, sorry, as the Kola Superdeep Borehole. It drilled down 7 miles into the Earth. It is the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, here's a question, right? If you were queuing up for a hot dog with your best mate, right, and then somehow you got involved in a freak hyper-ray accident, you got sucked up into space, what would you be more annoyed about while you're up there in the galaxies? Would you be more annoyed that you would never see your family again, or that your belly was rumbling because you left your hot dog on Earth? Yeah, it's probably the last one for me as well. It's what happened to Harry and Terry, though. Now, they're floating around the universe. They're learning loads more about it. They're telling us all as well. They are the Space Cadets, and today they're on Saturn.
Welcome along to the astro adventures of the Space Cadets.
Look, RoboWoof, what's this? What's this? Go fetch, boy.
Oops.
Terry, that's the third computer you've broken this week.
It wasn't me. It was Harry.
Was not. You threw the ball. Well, you put me off.
Anyway, before you two break anything else, we have a message from Mission Control. Are you ready for another mission, boys?
Another one? We've only just done one.
Harry, trying to make pizza with 12 toppings wasn't an official mission.
I didn't try to make a pizza with 12 toppings. I succeeded.
High five.
Today, Mission Control want us to go and take a look at Saturn and its rings. Hold on tight. Off we go.
What's that noise? Is there something wrong with the spaceship, Zingy?
I'm not sure.
Oh, no, sorry, guys. That's just me. I wanted to see if this thing had any games on it.
Terry, stop pressing buttons. That thing is a high-spec Space Navigator 5000 computer. It is not a toy. Although if you press shift 3 times, it does have Pac-Man on it.
Ooh, cool. Where are we, Zingy?
The spaceship Intrigue is currently positioned 100,000 miles above the planet Saturn, and from here you can see Saturn, its rings and many of its moons.
Wow. Terry, come and have a look at this.
Give me 1 second. No! Okay, fine. Let's have a look at this planet then. But I don't see what the fuss is about. You've seen one planet, you've seen them all. Whoa! It's huge!
Yes, the planet Saturn is the second biggest planet in our solar system after Jupiter. I can calculate that Saturn is around 9 times the size of Earth. However, it is in fact the lightest planet in the solar system. It is so light it would float on water.
You'd need a pretty big bathtub to test that out.
Think of the size of the rubber duck.
Why is it so light? What's it made of, Zingy?
Saturn is what's known as a gas giant. It's made out of hydrogen and helium gas.
That's the same gases as the Sun, isn't it? So why doesn't Saturn shine like the Sun?
It's not big enough. Because the Sun is so massive and dense, it causes nuclear fusion to occur, converting hydrogen to helium. If Saturn was much larger and denser, it would become a star like our Sun. As it is, however, it's an incredibly cold minus 178 degrees.
Whoa, what's that?
That sounds like one of Saturn's massive storms. It has a highly turbulent atmosphere. See those giant swirls of gas? Storms like these can cover billions of square miles on Saturn's surface and last for years.
I would hate that. Mum always makes me unplug the telly when there's a storm on at home.
I know. It would be terrible.
Well, because Saturn is made almost entirely out of gas, we can't land and get out anyway.
Good. So is it all made of gas, Zingy?
No. Whilst it is mostly gas, it's thought that Saturn probably does have a small core similar to that of Earth.
And what about the rings that go around it? What are they made of?
Well, let's go and take a closer look, shall we? Hold on tight! We are now positioned just above Saturn's rings.
Wow, they're not solid at all. Each ring is made of tiny bits of ice whizzing around the planet.
Yes, the rings are made almost entirely of pieces of ice. They're spread as far as 100,000 miles out from the main body of Saturn.
What are those bigger objects in the ice ring, Zingy? They look like moons.
Yes, they are small moons, or moonlets. There are hundreds of these mixed in amongst the vast ice rings which orbit Saturn.
Wow, Saturn has a lot going on.
As well as all that, the planet also has over 60 other moons which orbit the planet beyond the rings.
That's loads of natural satellites, Zingy. Hey look, is that a moon over there?
Yes, that one's called Titan. It's Saturn's biggest moon. It's so large that it's even bigger than the planet Mercury. Titan is the only known moon to have a dense atmosphere and is the only place in the solar system, other than Earth, where there is known to be liquid on its surface.
Oh, come on, Terry. Let's go swimming.
I'm afraid you'll have to put your rubber rings away, boys.
Oh.
And take those wetsuits off.
Oh.
Spoil sport.
Spoil water sport.
Ha, high five.
The liquid on the surface of Titan isn't water, it's liquid methane.
Oh, that's nothing. I went on holiday to Scarborough once. I'd had beans for lunch. Talk about a swim in liquid methane.
That was your gran's worst birthday ever.
That is both disgusting and scientifically questionable. Have you finished the report on Saturn and its rings and moons yet?
Done it, Zingy.
Excellent. I'll fire it off to Mission Control straight away.
What's that, boy? You want to play fetch? Go on, then. Fetch the ball.
Go on then, Terry. Fetch the dustpan.
Join us next time for more Astro Adventures with the Space Cadets.
Yeah, and there's loads more Space Cadets episodes that you can catch up on for free. Get to iTunes and the Fun Kids app on your phone or tablet, and you can have a listen at funkidslive.com. I'm loving, by the way, all the science questions that you've sent into my page on the Fun Kids website. We've had questions there about space, about the rainforest, about oceans, about gravity, and even some about why odd vegetables taste a bit like a skunk's tail. We'll try and get our expert Tom to answer them all, I promise. He's here every single week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly, and he knows all the secrets of what you ask him over at funkidslive.com. And today the question is from Connor, who is 8, who asks, how did salt get in the water?
So originally salt in the oceans was in rocks, and these rocks hit each other and it broke the salt down into smaller pieces. These pieces got so small that they can dissolve in water, which is why you can't actually see the molecules. It's because they're so mixed in with the water molecules, you can't spot it in a glass.
I'm going to build on Connor's question with my own question. Where did all the water that's in the sea come from?
It's a great question, and it's one we don't actually know. So it could have been that it was ice when the Earth was formed, but there's another theory which says it arrived on asteroids, and so the water was flying through space as ice and hit the Earth. And gradually, over millions of years, this accumulated into the oceans.
So before that happened, however our oceans were formed, before the asteroid, before the ice, would the Earth have just looked like a really craggly boulder with all these huge mountains that in the end became countries and continents?
Because it was so early in the Earth's formation, what it probably would have looked like is very volcanic. So it would have a lot of lava. It wouldn't be a very nice place to live. So once the water came, it didn't make too much of a difference to that, but gradually the planet would have cooled, and that's why we have all the mountains and ocean depths now.
And if we take the other theory, that our oceans were formed with massive chunks of ice that melted, what do we think would have caused them to melt on such a huge scale?
Good question. It would have been to do with the core of the Earth, although we know that the Earth was actually very fiery and volcanic in its start, so it's hard to say how those would have formed. Why wouldn't they just evaporated straight away?
Right, let's find out what sciencey stuff has been in the news this week. The Bloodhound supersonic car, it's conducted its first public runs. Now, remember, we spoke to the team who have made this car on the Fun Kids Science Weekly a few episodes ago now. You can go back, you can listen to that right now over at funkidslive.com if you fancy. It was a great chat. They're trying to take Bloodhound to over 1,000 miles an hour, the land speed record. It's never been done before. They're doing it using jet engines. It was tested in Newquay earlier on this week to great success. Also, scientists in India, they've discovered a 152-million-year-old fossil. It's an ichthyosaur, which is a marine reptile, and it was found in rocks from the Mesozoic era, which is the first time a species from that era has been found in India. And finally, mini rock pools are being made by scientists to protect sea species from man-made defences. This is because humans, they're building seawalls to hold back the water and protect the land, but it's disturbing marine habitats. So researchers from Aberystwyth University, they've drilled holes into them to give these sea species a place to live, which is amazing. It's a brilliant use of their cleverness. Right. After all that chat, I'm a little bit hungry. Let's get to the kitchen.
Kitchen Chemistry with the Royal Society of Chemistry.
You're right. Kay Mystery here, chemistry superhero. And I bet you didn't know that your kitchen, yep, the one in your house, is a real-life chemistry lab. Don't believe me? Come on.
Fridges and freezers are a brilliant way to keep food fresh. Bacteria are tiny organisms that turn food into mush. Cold temperatures slow them down. In this icy freezer, bacteria are frozen, and that's why things stay fresh for weeks, or even months in here.
Some things, like fruits and vegetables, aren't so good to freeze. This is because of the way they contain water. When water freezes, it expands. That means it gets bigger. The water inside the fruit or veggie cells expands, and this breaks the cell's walls, making it soft and soggy when defrosted. I'd rather have ice lollies. They're made from freezing juice. As the juice loses heat, its molecules move more and more slowly until it becomes a solid. Delicious.
Kitchen Chemistry with the Royal Society of Chemistry. Find out more and get hands-on with chemistry in your kitchen at funkidslive.com/chemistry.
Yeah, and we've got all the Kitchen Chemistry episodes that you can catch up on as well. On your phone or tablet, get to iTunes. And why don't you download the free Fun Kids app? Right, that is it then for another glorious and mind-bending episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. We'll be back next week with more amazing, weird and wonderful science from all around the universe. Now remember, over the week, drop the Fun Kids Science Weekly a review and 5 stars on the iTunes podcast store on your phone or your tablet. That would be amazing. Would let me know that you're really enjoying what we're doing. And while you're there as well, you can catch up on all of our brilliant Fun Kids Science series. And you can hear Fun Kids all around the country on your DAB digital radio, on the free Fun Kids app, and over at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.